I am Duncan MacLeod, born 400 years ago in the Highlands of Scotland. I am immortal, and I am not alone. For centuries we have waited for the time of the gathering, when the stroke of a sword and the fall of a head will release the power of the quickening. In the end, there can be only one.
Here we are, born to be kings. We're the princes of the universe.
And welcome into Let's Watch Highlander. This is Let's Watch Highlander, Season 1, Episode 15. This episode is For Tomorrow We Die, and with you to talk about it, I am Travis, a.k.a. TV's Travis, and we have Audie here.
Hey, what's up?
Not a whole lot. So we got another pretty good episode this week.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, so we're getting our stride now. The season is finally starting to be consistently good, instead of like, yeah, this one wasn't too bad, followed by, what did we just watch?
Right.
So this one opens up with a very well-dressed man coming up to it looks like a jewelry store, right 5 minutes to closing, works his way inside, starts flirting with the woman working. Then he produces a small little canister, tosses it behind himself, it lets out gas, and everybody dies. And then he wakes up a minute or two later. So, boom, we've got an immortal. He lets somebody into the store. They rob the store blind while everyone is dead. He's, of course, telling his compatriot here that, no, they're just sleeping. The effects will wear off after a few hours type thing.
And then they'll be fine.
Yeah. Then tells him, you're safe to take off your gas mask, followed by, nope, I was lying, and his confederate dies. He takes all the jewels, and off he goes. Right to Darius's confessional booth, where he decides he's going to go there and gloat. And this is where we learn that his name is Xavier St. Cloud, and he's basically a hedonist, steals a bunch of money, and is just taunting Darius with it, trying to get, I think, a rise out of Darius more than anything.
Hoping to, at least.
Yeah, because he knows Darius just isn't going to do anything about it. Duncan comes to visit his friend and continue the game of chess, and Inspector LeBrun comes in asking some questions of Darius because some witnesses had seen a man fitting the description of the man from the jewelry store entering the church. Now, Darius can't tell him anything about it. He refuses to help on the grounds of, you know, it was told to him in confessional. LeBrun is in the midst of explaining how the robbery went down when Duncan recognizes the MO, and we get our flashback. And then basically the rest of the episode is a combination of Xavier kind of taunting Duncan and Darius a little bit, setting up sort of a big thing at the end, and Duncan chasing him is pretty much the episode. It's a fairly straightforward story. We do get a little fun little side plot with Richie too.
Yeah.
But overall, it's really a very simple, straightforward story, and I appreciate that. So
yeah.
Duncan and Xavier do face off at the end of the episode at the barge and have a sword fight, with Duncan coming out victorious, but no beheading, no quickening. He cuts off his arm. Xavier pulls out yet another canister of nerve gas. Duncan cuts his hand off. Xavier screams, jumps into the river to swim away. Duncan chases him into the river, and that's how it ends. And we get the next morning with Tessa worried because Duncan hasn't come back all night, and he shows up looking like a drowned cat. And says that Xavier got away, he couldn't find him, and that's it. That's where the episode ends, with Duncan tired and wanting to go to bed.
I know the feeling.
Why do this? It means nothing to you. Because it means everything to you. Here I am, humiliating one of the world's greatest warriors, and what does he do? Nothing. God, I love religion.
So special guest stars this week, we had Roland Gift as Xavier St. Cloud. Now, if the name doesn't ring a bell, you've heard his music. He was the lead singer for the Fine Young Cannibals.
Yup.
And I really liked him.
Oh, yeah.
It's very similar to Kyler last week, where it's like a character that should be too much, should be too over the top, and shouldn't really work, but does.
Right.
You know,
one of those things where he doesn't go over the line of being too sinister, too cartoonish of a villain.
Yes, he's different from Kyler. So Kyler, I think so far has been our best villain to this point in part because he was just ruthless and he didn't care about anybody else. And he was just knew that he was good at being an assassin.
Mm-hmm.
And Xavier, I think what I liked about him was he's also ruthless, but in a cowardly way. He's very much a coward in how he goes about stuff. All he cares about is getting more money.
Right.
He doesn't care at all about mortals. He thinks that they're boring and that kind of stuff. But I liked the fact that he just smirks and smarms his way through life. Because, let's face it, he's a young, good-looking guy. And he's got plenty of money so he can dress well. And I think Roland Giff just nailed that part perfectly. He had the right look for it. That smirk that he's got makes you want to punch him in the face.
Right.
So it works. He almost feels slimy, yet incredibly charming because he's just got this really strong charisma about him.
Yes.
Especially
the charming part. Like, he's got that down.
Oh, totally. Like, you can totally buy him just charming the pants off that lady in the jewelry store and charming his way into the jewelry store 5 minutes before close, which, by the way, is a dick move. That should have told you enough right there. Like, I think I even wrote that down. Like, come on, 5 minutes before close, really? I think was one of my notes. But he's just great. He's great at it. And I think it also helps when you have, because he's yet another musician that they've had in this series play a character. We've had Joan Jett.
Right.
And a couple of others. What I like about it is give him, he's not as experienced an actor as maybe some others would be. He'd done a couple of TV shows and I think small bit parts in movies prior to this.
Mm-hmm.
But give him something that's almost not quite two-dimensional, but less than a fully fleshed out character that gives him something to really glom onto and just go here. Like, you're a hedonist. You enjoy what you're doing. You take great joy in rubbing it in Darius's face and just go with that. And it works so well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because he's not.
Just keep. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, he's not threatening in the same manner as like a Kyler or some of the other evil immortals. In so much as like he's scary, he's threatening in that he's a coward. So he's going to do whatever he can. And that's the whole thing with the mustard gas or the nerve gas, whatever he uses.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, he's very much a keep it simple, stupid kind of character.
Yeah, it also kind of makes sense if you think about it. Like, if you had the ability to not die from natural causes, not die from anything other than losing your head, that is a perfectly reasonable way to get around if you were going to go that path and decide you wanted to steal stuff. You just...
Mm-hmm.
Lob in some nerve gas, kill everybody in the room, and then walk in casually and take what you want. Like, from an efficiency standpoint, it makes sense. So it's a very cowardly and efficient manner with which he goes about things. And as a hedonist, totally fits.
Mm-hmm.
So, which also works when he gets confronted by Duncan. And what's he do? He runs. Like, he doesn't run.
Right.
When Duncan comes up to him at the, or I guess not really comes up to him, but confronts him at the cafe, boom, he's out of there. He just turns tail and runs. So very different from somebody like a Kyler, who I think would have drawn a sword on Duncan in the middle of the street if he felt like that's what he had to do. Whereas Xavier's just going to run and try to pick his spots.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that they don't kill him off immediately. We get an evil immortal that doesn't die, gets away, but it's very ambiguous.
Mm-hmm.
And spoiler alert, he'll come back later, which is good.
Ooh.
Which is good, honestly. I want to see, you know, some recurring characters, and they don't have to necessarily all be friends. Like, we've talked about that before with having an evil immortal or a bad guy kind of show up in an episode, but, you know, come back later. It doesn't have to show up and die in the same episode. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. We also have Darius back, Werner Stalker.
Yep.
Again, just nails it in this.
Oh my gosh. He's so good. He's almost too good for this episode.
He kind of almost is. And it's a great part for him in this where he's got to play this conflicted, guilty priest, right? Because I love the moment where Tessa and Duncan are talking about it.
That was super interesting.
Yeah, because it's not Darius is a man of peace now, and he has been for whatever it is, the last 1,200 years or something. But he's not a religious man, interestingly, even being a priest as long as he has been. It's different for him, and I think being alive for that long is a big reason for that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so much about what's behind the faith, what's behind the vows and the reasoning for stuff and taking care of other people.
Right.
For him, that it makes it an interesting kind of take on that whole role.
Well, I also wonder how much it's not that he is religious about it. It's just that all the other immortals around him wonder why he's religious at all, why he believes in God. Like, Duncan obviously is from that. The way he talks about it, it's like, you know, Darius is following this, you know, mortal thing. And it's like, so we understand that Duncan doesn't believe that, but I mm-hmm. don't take that as Darius not believing that. Like,
well, I think he kind of says it in this episode because Tessa's like, well, you said he was a Buddhist and something else at one point, you know, why is he now deciding that he has to follow this Catholic thing? And so I guess when I say religious, I mean like the strictly Catholic part of it, less sure. so than like the faith. Like Darius has a very okay, strong yeah. faith. But that faith isn't tied to Catholicism.
Right.
So.
But he's still going to follow the Catholic orders that he's taken.
Right. He's taken vows, and those vows are very important to him, and his faith mm-hmm. is such that he has to, if he takes that vow, he's going to follow it. So that right. was the part that I thought was really interesting is him following and sticking to those vows, even though it's not necessarily the religion that he cares about as much as it is the faith and taking care of people.
Mm-hmm.
Good and, point. You know, it also puts him in a very difficult position because Xavier knows that about him and is exploiting it, and it's making it really mm-hmm. difficult. I mean, he even contemplates, like, maybe I should come out of my sanctuary.
Right.
You know, and he gets to have, you know, he and Duncan get to have that moment of Duncan's like, look, if that's what you want to do, do it, but don't do it because of Xavier. Do it because it's what right. you want.
Exactly. That was a great little combo. Mm-hmm. And just the immortal slant on the whole Catholic priest isn't going to give the police the information because it was revealed in confession.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, we've seen this on plenty of cop shows, and it's just like, well, we know the priest isn't going to do it. Like, something's going to happen, but we know the priest isn't going to give up his vows unless there's, you know, dirty priest, whatever.
Yeah.
But on this one, it's like, oh no, there's a whole nother thing to it besides just that.
Yeah, there's a nice extra layer of like, well, not only can I not tell you because it was confessional, but you wouldn't believe it if I did tell you. And I like that. Yeah. And then he doesn't tell Duncan. Duncan's basically like, it was Xavier. And at that point, right. because I love the line when Duncan first shows up and he's, you know, hey, you ready for our game? And he's all happy-go-lucky until he sees how contemplative Darius is being. And he looks at him, mm-hmm. he's like, what's going on? What can you talk, you know? And just that line of like, some days being a Catholic priest is easier than others,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that whole, I'd tell you if I could, like, it's just, right. it's a nice exchange between those two.
Mm-hmm. And for a second there, I was like, why not tell Duncan? I mean, but it still comes back to the value taken. Like, that's impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. He still won't do it. I mean, if Duncan doesn't figure it out, no one is ever going to know, but Duncan is smart mm-hmm. enough. And obviously that MO is pretty unique using nerve gas that way.
Yeah.
We also had Inspector LeBrun in another episode. And again, he's good. Mm-hmm. He makes a great foil for Duncan as a cop.
Yeah.
I actually liked, too, the fact that the first scene we see LeBrun in, he's not using his right arm at all. If you pay attention mm-hmm. to that, they bring him the tapes, and he's just got his right arm just hanging there.
Okay.
Now, it doesn't necessarily stay that way throughout the entirety of the episode, I don't think, but it was a nice touch and a nice nod to our previous episode where he talks about his arm being just shattered and destroyed to have it there. But I don't know. I noticed that. I noticed that it just hung there the whole time.
That's one of those things that makes me wonder if the actor is the one who remembered that more than the writers. And he's just like, they didn't, you know, do anything with... you know, his wardrobe and stuff, but he just mentally was like, I'm not going to use my right arm.
Yeah. If so, good on him for that, because it's a nice little touch. So we're going to get him, I know, for at least another episode or two. I would like to see more of him and see that relationship go. And I think if the show doesn't go the direction it does with the Watchers, we probably do get more of that. But
right.
Overall, like I've said, he's probably at this point after these two episodes, top three in terms of like the revolving door of police we've had in this season.
Right. At least he's starting to be consistent.
Yeah. In fact, I would probably put him above Powell only because of the inconsistency of Sergeant Powell from in like the three episodes that we had with him.
Sure.
So, yeah. Powell had the best, I think, single episode of any police in this. And that was the Innocent Man episode.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. And then one other one I wanted to mention was Jean-Claude Deray, who plays Georges Dalou, who was kind of a crime boss, I guess, in Paris. Right. Has a little moment with Duncan. I just liked him. He was just a cool old man. That was a nice, like a really fun little exchange where Duncan's got to hide the fact that, you know, he knows it's Duncan. It's not Duncan's son, but there's no way the guy's going to believe him. Like, I just like, that was just a fun little moment.
Yeah. It's definitely one of those things where you know the writers are playing with the immortality thing a little bit and just like, okay, what if he comes back to somebody he knows from a long time ago?
Yep. Yeah, and it's a fun way to do it too.
Yeah.
Because not everybody's going to know. And I mean, if you're around as long as some of these people, like you go back somewhere, somebody's going to know you or recognize you. So it's a nice way for him to play it off where he can... Because, you know, he's not the same person that he was when he knew that man either.
Mm-hmm.
So even though he looks the same. Overall, I like that. I solid supporting cast special guests this week for sure.
Yeah.
You know, I love Werner Stalker as Darius and any episode he's in. And Roland Gift really... I remember this episode. I didn't remember Roland Gift being as good in this episode as he was. So yeah. That was a nice thing.
The funny thing is, I remember watching this back in the day, and I remember him being on a couple episodes. I had no idea he was a singer. I had no idea who the Fine Young Cannibals were. It was just like, whoa.
Well, yeah, and I'll refrain from making too many She Drives Me Crazy jokes.
Oh, my gosh.
You couldn't escape that song.
The funniest thing about that song is I'm from Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And in Atlanta on the local radio station, our money guy who talks about money and was like super cheapskate. And I say that in a term of endearment because he saved a bunch of money like crazy and stuff, was Clark Howard.
Okay. Yep.
And so, yeah, some of you may have heard him syndicated. And the beginning of his show every day was that guitar riff from Fine Young Cannibals. She Drives Me Crazy.
It's really the only song I'm known for. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But
and if you haven't seen it, watch the Muppet version because it's hilarious.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. So there's our guest stars. And we did get a flashback in this episode, so now we get to talk about that.
What's the matter?
Sometimes being a Catholic priest is easier than other times.
Anything you want to talk about?
Would that I could, my friend. Would that I could.
So we did have a flashback in this episode, only one. So we're back to one for this week. And it's not super long, but I also think that it was important for the story. It goes back to World War I in about 1917, I think is what they date it. Mm-hmm. And Duncan is part of the war. He's on the Allied forces. They don't really give an indication of a country. It's hard to tell. Right. Because he and his buddy sound American, but they definitely don't look like they're wearing American uniforms.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure. And it's pretty sure it's supposed to be in Paris, but it's payday for the soldiers. And as their truck comes up with the pay, suddenly mustard gas tossed in and they're all dead. And showing up is Xavier in a gas mask. When he gets the tingle with Duncan, kind of searches the field of dead people, points the sword at him, and is probably would have taken him out had some other soldiers not shown up.
Looks like it.
The interesting thing was, too, that Duncan doesn't get to see his face. He just hears his name through the gas mask. So really,
right.
Up until that point, or up until the present, Duncan doesn't, I don't think we're supposed to think that Duncan doesn't know what he looks like. He just knows right. the name. So, you know, that was kind of nice. What I liked about it, it's a quick flashback in terms of screen time, but it gets a lot of story across. It shows the connection between Duncan and Xavier, but it also shows that Xavier, this isn't a new thing for Xavier. This is what he's been doing.
Right. This is what he does. He gasses you, gets you out of the way, and gets what he wants.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Showing off, again, like I said, you know, he's a coward. He really is a hedonist coward. So it also gives a reason for Duncan to be as passionate about wanting to catch him and get rid of him as he is, because we know Duncan is a warrior. So when things happen to him in times of war, and the bonds that he makes with people around war are very strong. And this was a bunch of friend soldiers and allies that were all killed by this guy for no reason other than money. So Duncan's going to want to take this dude out.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciated that.
One other nitpick is how much, one, they did a good job of hiding Duncan's long hair, and two, gave him a terrible fake mustache. Like, boy, that thing was just barely holding on.
Yeah, that was probably the worst fake facial hair we've seen in the season yet. That was bad. But it's a good little flashback. I would have liked some more backstory. You know, if I'm going to nitpick, give me more kind of, you know, maybe another run-in that they had.
Right.
I guess the only thing it would have done is lose the mystique of perhaps Duncan not knowing. Or maybe give us another flashback with some of the history of Xavier and Darius.
Mm-hmm.
That could have been nice. You know, maybe Xavier's done this before with Darius, because we get it verbally from Darius, but I kind of want to see that and just...
Right.
You know. So that's probably my only nitpick that I would have done differently.
Yeah, and also the fact that Xavier knows who Darius is, knows who Duncan is. Mm-hmm. Like, he's kept tabs enough that he knows the players.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting, too.
Yeah, I think so.
Why do I argue with you?
Because you're country by nature.
I am not.
McLeod, are you there?
Yes, you are.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are.
No, I am not.
See what I mean?
So Richie in this episode, again, he's not in it for a ton. It's kind of levity. It's kind of comic relief, but not not as overtly comic relief as last week's.
No, but definitely B plot territory for him this time.
Oh, totally. But it's kind of a fun little B plot too, because it's sort of soap opera-y melodramatic, but at the same time, kind of feels like something that really could happen, because you got to figure he's supposed to be, you know, between 18 and 20, right? He's just a kid. Now suddenly he's living in Paris with no responsibilities. So he just gets to live in Paris. Like, ooh, that's rough.
Right.
And what's he do? He meets a nice French woman, and she kind of has a thing for him. He starts falling hard for her. Come to find out, she's a friend, or she's not a friend of Tessa's. Tessa knows her, and she's married.
Mm-hmm.
And so that does give us some fun moments between both Tessa and Duncan, and then Duncan and Richie, as you know, she, because Tessa, again, being the, you know, the older sister slash kind of mother figure to Richie, worries about him and doesn't want him to get hurt, but also wants Duncan to deal with it, which was great.
I was gonna say, she makes Duncan do the dirty work.
Yeah. Those were fun exchanges too. But also, like, one thing that I did like was it was true to Richie's character. He tries to let Renee down gently and thinks that he's going to, you know, kind of break her heart.
Right.
And then he has the realization that maybe that's not how things actually went. So I like that. I like that because both of those are Richie. Both of those work as his character, and Stan Kirsch pulls it off, because even as he's letting her down gently, you can kind of see where in the back of his head, Richie doesn't really believe what's happening is happening the way he thinks it should be.
Mm-hmm.
And then he has this little confessional moment with Tessa. And it's great because, again, it just shows the strength of their bond. All the relationships between these three are solid, real feeling relationships. Both, you know, the bond between Richie and Duncan, the bond between Richie and Tessa. And then, of course, the relationship between Tessa and Duncan, which, you know, kind of dovetails into Tessa doesn't have a huge narrative role in the episode. However, it's, again, very strong, you know, their relationship and how strong and real their relationship feels.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, I made a note about their discussion / fight about stuff.
Yeah.
And that it's, you know, it really is mostly a discussion. There's a little fighting in there about, you know, who thinks what or who's trying to feel what. But it's honest, mm-hmm. I would say. I think that's the best thing you could say about this series is the relationships feel honest.
Yes, absolutely. For all the things that we've talked about being, you know, less than great in this first season, that the relationships between our three main players are strong and they feel good. And they feel like the relationships of real people.
Right. And we're starting to get that with more of the regular players that come in here and there, like with Darius. Like him just sitting on the bench and wondering, what the heck am I doing here? Is this doing any good? And Duncan consoling him and, you know, helping him make whatever decision he has to make.
Yes.
That, again, feels like two buddies talking things out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're getting some much better writing. For sure. Mm-hmm. I also like that they don't constantly have to use Tessa as a damsel in distress. Even though she is put in danger in this episode, it's indirect danger. And the danger that she is put in is solely because of her position, not because of her relationship to Duncan.
Right. It's circumstantial danger, and it's not even like she's the only one. She just happens to be there.
Yeah, she's the...
And it's more because of Duncan than anything.
Yep, it's because of Duncan, but she's like the avenue that Xavier can use to both hurt Duncan and get a whole bunch of stuff, right? Because he can set that bomb off and then just stroll in and take all that money from all the rich people that show up at that museum.
Right.
So, but I like the fact that they don't have to use her. They've had her in some damsel in distress situations, and when she's in them, she's a very strong character, but they don't always put her in that. They don't overplay that card, which I appreciate.
Also, going back to the relationships between our three mains, I just love the little jabs here and there about dating older people.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that was great. That was such a good one. You know, dating an older woman, and Duncan's just like, oh, no, we're not going there.
That's not firm ground for you to stand on.
Well, even Richie mentioning it, like, have you ever fallen for an older woman? And Duncan's response is great. Like, well, it hasn't come up lately. And then
I know.
You got to think about Amanda.
Uh-huh. That's exactly what I was thinking.
We'll find soon. And so that, like, when you know that Amanda's coming up soon and he says that, it just makes me chuckle. So I love that, though. Like, it's making these people feel like actual people instead of just characters.
Right.
So, once again, solid work from both Tessa and Richie, both in the writing and the performances.
Well, I suppose there are worse things one could be than a sex object.
So just like last week, I think we got a super solid episode here. I put it like a quarter step below last week's episode. I just like For Evil's Sake just a touch more. I really, really like the character of Xavier St. Cloud and Roland Gift. There's something about Kyler that was a little bit more like deliciously evil that I enjoyed. However, we're going to get more Xavier. So that really helps this episode too, because it doesn't have to, not every episode has to end with a quickening.
Yeah. And we've had a few that haven't, but this is one where it's like, actually, I think the ones where there hasn't been a quickening, there hasn't been an immortal involved. This has been one where we've had an immortal and they get away.
Yep. I think the only other time that's happened was the episode with Dustin Nguyen, where the bad immortal gets away, but he was less an evil immortal and more a misguided one that Duncan still has respect for.
Because
this was a straight up, like, Duncan has no respect and no love for Xavier, and he wants to kill him.
Right.
Like, just straight up wants to kill him and doesn't get to. So we kind of get that too. Plus, this episode had angry, cocky Duncan, and I like him. Mm-hmm. I like angry Duncan more than brooding Duncan.
Right.
He's just, there's something about the swagger he has when he, because he knows he's good. And that just that, when he's got that little bit of swagger and that little bit of like, yeah, you know, I'm going to do what I want to do because that's what I'm going to do.
Right.
It's just something I like about that.
And can we talk about that for a second? This is another one of those episodes where they're telling you just how good of a person Duncan is. So Xavier's partner in crime, he kills at the jewelry store.
Yes.
So what does Duncan do? He tries to find out what's going on. He talks to old Parisian gangster dude who mm-hmm. tells Duncan he knows the guy. He knows the guy's mother. And what does Duncan do? Duncan pays for the burial.
Yeah.
Duncan gives the family money and tries to get some information from the mom to figure out who did this. Like,
yep.
Duncan's like showing you just how good of a person he is.
Yeah, I mean, okay, if you want to be super cynical, you can say he's only doing it to get information on Xavier, but we know that's not the case. He's getting right. information on Xavier, but he's genuinely doing this because he thinks it's the right thing to do for this man. Because now I think mm-hmm. if he runs into old Parisian gangster man, and that guy doesn't have good things to say about the young man that died, Duncan goes in a very different direction. But this guy was like, look, he was a good kid that did work mm-hmm. for me and all this. So Duncan's like, I'm going to take care of him. And you're right. It just shows how good of a person Duncan is. And I love that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, really, really good. Solid episode. This is a definite A, mm-hmm. A episode. Even the stuff that's weaker, which is like the subplot with Richie, is probably the weakest part of this episode. And it's still pretty good mm-hmm. because it still stays true to the character and doesn't get too cringy.
Right. Yeah. Solid episode.
Yep, absolutely. Now, next week, we've got one called The Beast Below, and I vaguely remember this one. It's got a little bit of a Phantom of the Opera kind of feel going on to it, or Beauty and the Beast type of thing, if I remember correctly. So, should be good.
Interesting.
That's going to be next week's episode of The Beast Below. And nice. As you know, if you are listening to this and have been listening for the last 14 episodes, we record every Monday night at 9 o'clock Eastern time, twitch.tv/TV's Travis. So if you are interested in checking out the recording process and getting into the conversation with us, come on in, jump in the chat room and chat with us. We love taking questions. We love talking about stuff, getting your take on things. So twitch.tv/TV's Travis, come talk with Audie and I.
Yeah, you can watch the episode ahead if you want and come chat with us the same way we're doing here.
Yep, and if the series ever comes back onto Amazon Prime, we're going to go back to doing watch parties ahead of the recordings for sure. So overall, that is... Oh, hold on. There you are. Okay, I thought I lost you for a second. Okay. You got frozen on me for there for a moment.
Uh-oh.
And then... New episodes of the show come out every Thursday. So even if you don't mm-hmm. make it for the live recordings, Thursdays, new episodes drop every week. We're going through mm-hmm. episode by episode. So we appreciate you listening. If you do listen, you can leave us a review or rate us on Apple Podcasts, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. That helps us mm-hmm. to become more discoverable too.
Right.
And keep an eye out on my Twitter at TV's Travis, or Audie's Twitter at Oddly Normal One. There may
all spelled out.
Yep. The number one is spelled out as well. And there may be some new things coming up in the not too distant future. We might be having some Patreon type goals coming up. So, you know, keep an eye out for that. But if you listen to the show, we appreciate it. We love you. And thank you so much.
Very much so. Thank you.
So next week is The Beast Below. And as always, there can be only one. 103 episodes, I think.
Sure. That works.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.